This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is Philip C. It has just gone past 6 a.m. in the morning. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of February. And because of the public holiday on Monday, we're halfway through the week.
I know, hump day.
Yeah, perfect, right?
Yes, great.
I mean, we always joke about it, but seriously, whenever there's a public holiday, either on Friday or Monday, I'm like, this should be the norm. This should be how life is. 4-day weeks are great. And you know, Philip, I just realized, like I say, today, 3rd of February, and we've only got another 9 days before Chinese New Year.
I know. I'm excited. Well, partly excited now. That excitement has deflated a bit after yesterday's MCO extension.
A little bit. I mean, I think it has to be done, unfortunately,
yes,
right? Because a little bit of cheer, the COVID-19 infection rates have come down. I think it was below 4,000, but still extremely, extremely high.
I think the recoveries were higher than the infections yesterday.
But the sad thing, I think, was the death rate was the highest, 21, if I'm not wrong. So nonetheless, I think a little bit of sacrifice from all of us is needed to kind of flatten the pandemic curve. And what's really, for me, I mean, I think post-Chinese New Year, there will be not a single Malaysian festival that has not been celebrated in the new COVID-19 era.
I'm looking forward to Raya. So I was thinking, okay, we're going to make Raya amazing because
by then,
I can't make Chinese New Year amazing now. So I'm just moving forward to the next celebration. I said, okay, next one's going to be good, you know?
We hope so because, I mean, you don't know. By then, hopefully, there will be, you know, a better vaccination drive and the vaccination would have started somewhat of a herd immunity, some relaxation in terms of SOPs. But for this Chinese New Year, it will be a rather different experience. But nonetheless, thanks to technology, you can still do some things like receive ang paos via e-wallet or through your bank account. So no excuses there, even if you don't see your relatives.
Hint, hint to the aunties.
hint.
Without the difficult questions, right? Are you married? Or why are you not married yet? Why you don't have children and all that stuff?
But they can still WhatsApp you.
You can still WhatsApp.
At least you can ignore it.
Or you can just have automated responses, right?
That's true. But what else are we discussing this morning?
Well, on that spirit, I think we want to basically share the SOPs in Singapore, right?
Oh.
How are they celebrating Chinese New Year? Because our government is still developing the SOPs. So we thought we'd give a little bit of a leg up and maybe some inspiration on how we should be doing our SOPs in Malaysia.
I think we're supposed to come out with ours in a few days. So yeah, maybe we can even do a comparison.
Yes.
But in the meantime, we'll be talking about family businesses, which are so common in Asia. And are they actually doing better in this pandemic? But as usual, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio on any of these topics. Maybe tell us how you intend to celebrate Chinese New Year. We'll have more for you in a few minutes, but first here's Nixia by Foo Fighters. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Nixia by the Foo Fighters. You're listening to The Morning Run with Philip C. and of course I'm Wong Xiaoning. Now, we are looking at this interesting article from the Financial Times, and you know, it's entitled Family Businesses Are Welcome Winners in This Pandemic. So I'm just thinking, is this relatable to Malaysia? Because let's face it, especially in Asia and this region, family businesses are almost the norm, right?
Yeah, I think they run or initiate many of the companies that have now grown or
who are the big conglomerates.
Exactly.
Actually.
And you're right, in this study, in UK, it basically says that after the 2008 financial crisis, academics actually found that family outfits had much lower insolvency rates across all sizes of businesses. And I find that so fascinating.
Is it because they don't pay their family members?
And I think that's partly the answer, you know, which is they unite and basically know how to deal with a crisis. And I find particularly that a crisis reveals the culture and values of the company more prominently. And because families are woven by these behaviors and values and cultures from the youngest ages possible.
And best emotional guilt.
And emotional guilt as well.
Yeah. You don't forget that part. That's very important.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think also, like you say, like, you know, family business, you know, they think about things on a very long-term basis, right?
Yes.
They are all about longevity in the sense that in their mind, they're thinking, especially if you're the patriarch or the matriarch of this family business, it's all about passing it on to the next generation. So you think, okay, whatever decision I'm going to make is for the next generation. It's not just going to be for me. And it's not to say that family businesses do not have limitations. Trust me,
sure. There
are limitations just like any other kind of business. And we'll get to that in a minute. But the pluses are, like I say, that sense of duty, that sense of resilience, that sense of thinking of longevity.
Legacy.
Yeah, legacy. So when you do need to kind of really hunker down, you have that commitment, right? Because, and it's also when you're family business and you don't, it's not a democracy, right? But let's face it, many family business are run by a single, either it's the father, mother or whatever, or uncle or auntie. They can make these decisions very quickly. And sometimes you need that because in a pandemic, you need to adjust. You need to kind of crisis management on a day-to-day basis, right? So you go like, okay, guys, MCO, you know, we can't open our shop. Let's say you're a restaurant. We can't open our shop. Now, what do we need to do? Let's do it ASAP, quickly.
Correctly.
Okay? And, you know, they can just like, all right, let's call, get our drivers to send out the food. Let's do social media quickly. There's no like bureaucracy. So I think that probably helps.
Your point is so pertinent because it links to the question about ownership. Family businesses really take ownership to the next level. You know, we talk a lot about corporate Malaysia. And if you listen, right, they talk about employees. Well, can we make them have more ownership, feel belonging to the company? Nothing beats a family business because you really own it.
Yeah, and it's your money.
That's right. And with that ownership, that's where bureaucracy is killed. You get stuff done very fast. You unite. Incredibly, and I think one of the most important things during a crisis is the integration of business and personal life is really important because you need to get all wheels working together, and how you hunger and communicate between family members so crucial.
Yeah, I think also when it is a family business, and this is the part that's not great, but it's the reality, is that there is no work-life balance. Your family life is your corporate life and your business all entangled. So in a crisis, you can kind of say, okay, I just have to do it. You know, everybody sacrifice time, and you know, it's about just getting it done, right? There's no choice. But I wonder in terms of the negatives, and there are, right? I think family businesses, they aren't very good at taking feedback or like engaging their fellow employees in terms of like a two-way communication to improve. So I think family businesses have to adapt. Right, whether they are also open to change and listening to that change, especially sometimes maybe from the younger family members.
Well, I find that interesting because as someone who worked in a family business, and I'm not a family member, and I see two of them talking, I'm looking at them arguing and debating. I said, that's not really a business issue. That's a family issue. Why don't you
don't drag me into it.
Why don't you move that into the family room? Because it's a business discussion. So that's really the challenge, right? How do you draw the line as well between business issues and also family issues? Now, there was a very interesting survey about dynamics. And what I find is that cousins actually make a very interesting family business dynamic because they're not so interlinked or so close, but they still understand values and culture quite well.
This would be interesting, especially for some of the larger Malaysian corporates, right? Because now you're talking about the second generation running the company. I mean, we've of course got a lot of, you know, like Public Bank, Hong Leong Bank, you know, started by, of course, great men. Then the second generation, the question is, yeah, takes over. Then what happens there? And then, yeah, you're seeing this happen on a corporate level. Yeah, it'll be interesting to observe. Do they make better bosses? Do they make better companies?
Yes. And cousins, I find interesting because if they were cultivated from young and live and, you know, go and play together or go holidays together, but still have that separation. So they still understand, okay, I understand each other much better, but I also build the business together, but I also have some space in between. That's, I think, very fascinating and interesting.
But sadly, we've also seen some Malaysian companies, let's not name them, that where the family dispute ends up killing the company, right? Or causing it to be sold, or the dispute ends in a way very badly for everybody, so the company never thrives. So sometimes there's that challenge, right? Because there's just so much bad blood over the years. But one thing I do know about family businesses, they tend to be more frugal. So it helps this pandemic era where the one thing you can control is cost when you can't control your top line.
They do say innovation is much lower, but they get more out of the innovation dollar in a family business versus a non-family business.
Yeah, because the dollar that they're spending is their dollar.
Yes.
But let us know what you think. Do you think family businesses are better primed to overcome this pandemic? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. And of course, you can also tweet in at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll have some messages and then we'll come back to the question of what are the SOPs that you should enforce during Chinese New Year. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Weezer. It's a cover. I think the original singer is
that song.
Yeah, Tears to Your Fears, right? It was like such a landmark song. Anyway, you're listening to The Morning Run with Xiaoning and Philip C. And up next, Philip, it's a very interesting choice of yours this morning because it's not from a newspaper. It's not from a media outlet. It's from a government. And yes, it's the government of Singapore. And we are looking at their Singapore Government Agency website. And it's entitled Safe Management Measures and Chinese New Year. Because earlier on, we were just saying, hey, only 9 more days to CNY. Are you prepped? Are you ready to go? And I think the Singapore government seems to be ready to
go. Ready to go. And this was not new, not recent. It came out, I think, last week. And there were a lot of jokes about it.
Because it was actually, like you say, published on the 22nd of January.
That's right. And there were the specificity of the guidelines, well, are not very, really reflect Singapore as an attitude. But it's also very calming and clear. And that's what I think many people are looking for and hoping for as our government drafts the SOPs as well for our Chinese New Year.
Yeah, because yesterday, Senior Minister Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri announced that the MCO had been extended until February 18 in all states except Sarawak, with tighter SOPs in place. But we don't know what those SOPs are yet, because yes, I think they are still waiting to let us know, or they'll inform us in the next few days.
Hopefully. Yeah, hopefully before this weekend, because this weekend is going to be critical. It's the weekend before people do all the shopping for the actual Chinese New Year.
But I don't know whether people will still be running out to do all their shopping when one of the things you can't do is interstate travel, because for a lot of Malaysian Chinese, exactly, Chinese New Year is a time when they go back to their hometowns and visit, you know, their relatives there and have these big reunion dinners. Mm. And that's clearly not happening. Now, in terms of what we can do within a household, we still don't know yet, right? Are we allowed to have these reunion dinners? Like, is it limited to just immediate family? Can we have it extended family? Is it up to 8 people, 9 people? Question marks still
question
there.
Question marks, yes. And that's why Singapore is interesting. I really love this specific guideline, which is from 26 January 2021. There will be a cap of 8 unique visitors per household per day.
What is the unique visitor, though? What is the definition of that?
Unique is one, which is, okay, you have to identify and record it. So everyone must have some QR code, I presume.
Okay, so we should be running out and have these QR codes. And you can, you know, you can actually register a My Sejahtera kind of code and paste it in front of your house. I've seen that some people have done that.
Correct.
One of my colleagues, if I'm not wrong, prior to when things were a bit more relaxed and there was no limitations for visitors, her father actually did that and put it on the door. So when the aunties came, they all had to scan it.
A tad bit controlling, no?
I know, but hey, it's all about contact tracing, right? The family's doing their part. So I don't know, is that going to be something that we are going to do? Maybe is that what Singapore's doing?
And I find the number 8 interesting. I don't know whether there's a science to the number 8 whether it was, okay la, Chinese New Year, fart, let's make 8, right? Lucky. So
prosper,
you know,
prosper.
Prosper, prosper, prosper. So I don't know whether there's a combination
was
of...
Was it a science or art?
Exactly.
Or just like, okay, let's choose that number. It seems like a lucky number. The other thing, Philip, I noticed that was interesting is this paragraph where they say, okay, staying safe during Chinese New Year, and it's about the dining out, okay? And they are so specific that you need to wear a mask if you're not eating or drinking. So that means that must be worn during the tossing of yi sang. So they even specify that, okay?
Avoid raising voices at all time. Low hei should be done without saying the usual auspicious phrases.
Oh, the one where, you know, KLCI 2000, yes, bonus 12 months.
Correct.
Many, many children. Okay, all those can't say, or you say it inside softly.
Or there's apparently tech apps or solutions where you can play the auspicious phrases while you do the tossing.
Well, who says we're not innovative? Who says we're not innovative? And who says technology doesn't come to your rescue?
Right. There's also another guideline, which is limit your visits to family and to not more than 2 households per day. Otherwise, connect digitally with your friends and family.
Okay, Zoom, guys. Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Google Hangouts, whatever. Choose your poison.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think that's perfect, especially if you really think, if you have vulnerable people in your household. So I think, like in my case, where my parents are a little bit elderly, you know, and if these people want to come visit, they can visit via Zoom. Because you shouldn't be exposing sometimes older people. I think that's the reality.
That's the reality.
Yeah. So I think their argument is that keeping to these measures will help avoid sparking large clusters. And they tell you why. They tell you that it's because this will then lead to the tightening of measures. So I think the interesting thing about this is that they tell you the rationale for everything. It's not like instructions, but instructions with reasoning behind it. And I think that's the very important in this COVID-19 pandemic. And it's been proven successful, especially in places like New Zealand and Australia, where when they come down hard or they give instructions or they come up with new rules, they tell you the reasons for it. They then also tell you when these rules will be relaxed if certain criteria is met.
Yeah.
And I think human beings like that, right? We need to know the when and why, right?
And the reasoning and rationale.
Yeah. So let us know. Maybe you can come up with some suggestions on what kind of Chinese New Year SOPs we should be enforcing.
Or what apps we should use to make life apps, easier.
Exactly. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin. And to take us there is We Built This City by Starship, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 is just gone past, well, it's actually going to be 6:40 in about 10 seconds now. It is actually the Wednesday, the 3rd of February. And I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Philip C. And of course, this is The Morning Run. And that song was Superfly by Curtis Mayfield. Rather cool
name. Feeling Superfly, Xiaoning?
I certainly am. Have to feel that way, right? Got to keep the optimism
you
going.
You have to, no
choice. No choice. But before we get into some of the headlines, global headlines, I just want to read some of these interesting social media comments that have come in. One of them is a tweet from Hannah, and she's suggesting in terms of how to celebrate Chinese New Year, no dining, no interstate travels, contactless ang pao exchanges via e-wallets, pubs should still be closed, use recorded voice yelling for low sound, karaoke is not allowed. And unfortunately, yeah, you can't buy clothes at the stores, although you can order it through online. And no fireworks or firecrackers. That's the suggestion. But that's quite sad, though, I have to say, Hannah. It doesn't really resemble the Chinese New Year that we know. But I guess everybody has to adjust. Everyone has to make certain sacrifices.
I feel mixed responses to the karaoke not allowed. I do find the voices jarring, especially those who have no talent and can't sing. But at the same time, it's really great bribery, you know, when you record it and say, hey, you know, this is what you did during Chinese New Year. So I have mixed feelings about that, but I understand the logic.
I think everyone should just let their hair down. I mean, okay, when karaoke is allowed, I'm one of those, let it all out, okay? It's the moment where you can pretend that you're like a great singer. And hey, your friends and family should just cheer you on.
I will have my video recording available when we when we hang out later.
Yeah, one day when we can go back to places like Redbox. And we have a comment from Yusuf. It's I think in relation to the Singapore SOPs for Chinese New Year, and he's suggesting that, you know, maybe we should observe what the red dot is doing down south and just copy, because we shouldn't still be debating about what best to do after 12 months.
I think so. If you hear a best practice or best case that seems workable, you know,
why not? And you can copy and maybe make some slight adjustments and improve on it. But I think why not, right?
Why not?
Why do you need to reinvent the wheel if the wheel is perfectly fine?
Although I must say the cases in Singapore are much less compared to Malaysia. So maybe they will even tighten it further. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe so we do need to be more strict. It's true, because our infection rate yesterday was 3,455, which is still very high, and the highest death rate ever yesterday, sadly. So total deaths in Malaysia, 791. And the reason why I say these numbers out loud on air is to remind everyone that we still need to observe these SOPs. And yes, there is lockdown fatigue. It's real. I'm not going to say it isn't, but I'm sorry, it's a battle. Mm. It's not just a war, right? We just got to keep plugging at it. But in the meantime, I think we have to turn our attention to Myanmar. And I think we'll be discussing the situation there in depth later at 7:30 a.m. with Sebastian Strangio, who's a longtime commentator on Southeast Asia. He's going to join us and, you know, give his analysis on what's going on there. But meanwhile, the BBC reports that residents in Yangon have begun to show their resistance to the military takeover by banging pots and pans and honking car horns yesterday evening.
Yeah, I think this is interesting because, you know, as someone who's been in Myanmar, I always question how important or consequential Myanmar is to a Malaysian like me. And it has sits many levels, you know. One, there's a kind of a diplomatic position of where ASEAN is. How does ASEAN tackle all these issues?
Soft. That's our approach, right? We never have this open confrontation.
And is that the right approach is the question mark I have.
But that is the foundation of ASEAN. Hmm. We have never really like had any open words with each other, open conflict. Everything is like softly and gently.
Yeah, it's a bit of a non-confrontational stand. But the next level of how does it have consequence to me is the economic side. How is Malaysia as a trading partner, right, relative to a lot of the other countries like Singapore or China and India? That's a really important part. And the third dimension, especially with Myanmar, is its foreign workers, right, and its workers in Malaysia. I think nearly 500,000 Myanmaris actually actually reside in Malaysia as of 2020. And nearly half of that half are even undocumented illegal workers purportedly. So that consequence and impact is very interesting. And these three dynamics for me really gets me wondering, how does this development affect Malaysia as well?
Yeah. You know, if you talk about investments, and this was interesting because I just observed it on Bloomberg, the largest investor in Burma with $21.5 billion in approved foreign capital is actually Singapore. And the second largest is China. Now, China, of course, has very, very close ties with the military in Burma. And they have basically been very diplomatic in their comments as to what is happening. And the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson basically called Myanmar a friendly neighbor and urged all sides to properly manage differences, which is quite different from what the US is probably going to say, right?
Absolutely. So in China, I think you, as you said rightfully, Xiaoning, they were saying like it's like a cabinet reshuffle type, whereas I think President Biden is taking a harder stand and reviewing whether or not to impose sanctions again. The question in my mind is, how impactful are those sanctions? Because we talked about it just now, right, where 80% of export trade is actually China, India and ASEAN by itself. So if Western countries, Western nations apply these sanctions, right, how will it impact the country, and will it impact actually not the military leaders but the poorest of the poor in Myanmar? And that's a question I have in my mind, whether it's all bluster and symbolism when we do these sanctions, or how targeted can they do to make sure that they have the right consequences and impact.
Yeah, I think we can actually, I mean, I'm not really sure whether it's really parallels or they are an apple for apple comparison. But one country that has really felt the brunt of sanctions against them is Iran, right?
Yeah.
And the people actually pay the price, not so much the government leaders there. So you're right, you know, if you have these sanctions, what does it mean for the ordinary Myanmarese? Does it have an impact on their daily lives? And do the military just carry on as usual? Because this is not the first time that they're back in charge, right? Because democracy for them is a relatively new thing, and it's not even the version that we are used to. But as usual, give us your thoughts. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or treat us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. Don't go away, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, it has just gone past 6:51 in the morning. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of February, and that was Before You Accuse Me by Eric Clapton. And of course, this is The Morning Run with Philip C and Wong Xiaoning. Now, we're taking a look at some of the local news stories this morning. And what has pickled your interest, Philip?
Oh, many things pickled me, Xiaoning.
Okay.
Absolutely. But I want to point to the Star Biz, well, the Star newspaper. And on the front page, there's a really nice chart. I'm a geek and nerd, right? And so the chart.
You love numbers, right?
I love numbers.
You're
I love
an engineer,
graphs.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it is about the COVID-19 crisis and how basically different Asian countries have basically been pumping direct stimulus or other fiscal support as a percentage of GDP. And so this chart shows Singapore is number one, where nearly 20% of its GDP has been driven to help recover from COVID. And Malaysia is a third at about 17%.
Okay, but this pumping in, I'm curious, you know, because Malaysia, a lot of it was actually not real direct government, right?
Exactly.
It was actually using the banks to help, for example.
That's where the difference is. So okay. In Singapore, two-thirds is direct fiscal. The other one-third is other fiscal support like credit guarantees, deferral of payments. It's the reverse in Malaysia.
Yeah, well, we all know Singapore has got a fair bit of reserves. Financial reserves to do so. Their fiscal headroom is a lot more space than ours. We've already been warned by Fitch, you know, be careful with your fiscal deficit. And we
Correct.
Had that downgrade in our outlook. So yeah, it's interesting in terms of the capacity as to what each government can do and balance that position. But in the meantime, I've got this, I would actually rather say a rather interesting article in the Edge CEO brief, morning brief. And it's actually from Pharma Niaga's CEO, I think, when he had his media briefing. And he basically says, look into vaccine distribution ventures by non-healthcare firms. Because it's true, we've had many of them on our breakfast grill. So far we know companies, non-healthcare firms that plan to distribute COVID-19 vaccines in anticipation of higher demand include the likes of Solution Group, Bintai Kinden, Hoa Genting, MyEG Services, Yongtai, which the breakfast grill, if I'm not wrong, was just yesterday.
Yesterday, yes.
Yeah. and which you can listen to on the BFM app or on Spotify, and Medtronic Global. But the question is, the CEO, the group managing director of Pharmanaga, Datuk Zulkarnin, said in response to a question, he said that for the time being, these companies are not allowed to distribute the COVID-19 vaccine to the general public due to the government's planned vaccination program, which is focused on general public use. And yeah, there are questions like, are these companies, you know, is it the right thing for them to do when they are not in healthcare? Do they know what they're doing?
I think this distribution strategy has to come top down. I really find it hard to understand why different companies can develop their own distribution strategies.
Well, Khairi Jamaluddin, the Science and Technology Innovation Minister, said that, you know, when a local company is free to negotiate any international company to be their agent or distributor of COVID-19 vaccine. So yes, it is a commercial arrangement. You can't stop them. But nonetheless, there still needs to be approvals from the ministry, from Malaysia's regulators. So I guess the next step is for these companies to prove that these vaccines work, that they have everything in place, and that the rollout will be done properly. So I think, yeah, interesting to know whether these companies will actually meet the minimum criteria.
Yes, and when is the start date actually, do you know, Shauni? Because I heard recently that the Sinovac vaccine is coming a month earlier now into Malaysia, from what I understand.
If I'm not wrong, I saw the first headlines in terms of the first batch of vaccines to come in is
February. That's for the Pfizer vaccine.
February 26th, right? That
will
be
right.
The first rollout.
Yeah.
So let's see how that rollout happens and you know, whether we will get more colour in terms of the vaccination program. So interesting stuff, because when you see corporate Malaysia being involved in vaccines, what else has caught your interest?
Well, a small little article where former Petronas head Tan Sri Wan Zulkifli Wan Arifin has now joined the board of directors at ExxonMobil.
Ah, okay.
Right, so from another oil company to being a board member of ExxonMobil. So I think ExxonMobil in its heyday was like one of the highest market cap companies
in the
world.
Yes, yes, right? All the oil and gas guys, right?
That's
but if
right.
I'm not wrong, BP suffered losses of 96% profit drop. So
Challenging times, especially as we shift away to sustainable renewable energy as well.
Yeah, I mean, even all these oil and gas companies finding new business ventures. Meanwhile, in the Malaysian Reserve on page 3, Tunku Zafrul maintains Malaysia's GDP projection. He says that we still can achieve 6.5 to 7.5 in 2021, despite losing 600 million daily due to the second MCO. And now there's another 14 days of extension. Personally, I think it's going to be a bit of a challenge, and I've already seen some downgrades in terms of GDP from some of the economists out there.
That's right.
So let's just see whether we can really make up for the numbers for the balance of the year. But I think so much really depends on the vaccine rollout and also global economic recovery, because nonetheless, we're still a very export-driven economy. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Jack Kuzi to find out his take on all the tech results that came out just a few hours ago. But first, here's Got to Get You Into My Life by The Beatles. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.